jatim vyasam. Tato jaya mudirayat. Nasta pareshu avadreshu. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. Bhagavati tamashloke. Bhakti bhavati naishtaki. So before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, we'd like to offer our respects and gratitude to the Supreme Lord, to Nara Narayan Rishi, to Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and to Srila Vyasadeva, the author. And we are so fortunate that by assembling together to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and perhaps getting some realization and sharing our knowledge, that perhaps all the inauspicious things in our heart will be destroyed almost to nil, and we can develop some love and appreciation for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So thank you very much for being here. Today we are reading from the third canto, the sixth chapter, text 36. Tata pikirta yamanga.
Tata pikirta yamanga.
Yata mati yata shutam.
Yata mati yata shutam.
Kirtam hare sumsatkartum.
Kirtam hare sumsatkartum.
Giramanya bidasatim.
Giramanya bidasatim.
Tata pikirta yamanga. Yata mati yata shrutam. Kirtam hare swam satkartum. Giramanya bidasatim. Next, please. Kirtam hare samsatkartum. Giramanya vidasatim. Tatapi kirtayam yanga. Dhammati yathasutam. Kirtam hare samsatkartum. Giramanya vidasatim.
Tatapi
kirtayam yanga.
Yathamati
yathashrutam.
Kirtim
hare svam satkartum. Yathamati yathashrutam. Kirtim hare svam satkartum. Giramanya vidasatim. Tathapi kirtayam yanga. Yathamati yathashrutam. Kirtam hare svam satkartum.
Giramanya
vidasatim. Tata.
Therefore.
Api.
Although it is so.
Kirtayami.
I do describe.
Anga.
O vidura.
Yata.
As much as.
Mati,
intelligence.
Yata,
as much as.
Shrutam,
heard.
Kirtim,
glories.
Hare,
of the Lord.
Swam,
own.
Satkartum,
just purify.
Giram.
Speechless.
Anyabida.
Otherwise.
Asatim.
Unchaste.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. In spite of my inability, whatever I have been able to hear from the spiritual master and whatever I could assimilate, I am now describing in glorification of the Lord by pure speech. For otherwise, my power of speaking would remain unchaste. Purport. The purification of the conditioned soul necessitates purification of his consciousness. By the presence of consciousness, the presence of the transcendental soul is verified. And as soon as consciousness leaves the body, the material body is not active. Consciousness is perceived, therefore, by activities. The theory put forward by empiric philosophers that consciousness can remain in an inactive state is the proof of their poor fund of knowledge. One should not become unchaste by stopping the activities of pure consciousness. If the activities of pure consciousness are stopped, certainly the conscious living force will be otherwise engaged, because unless engaged, the consciousness has no standing. Consciousness cannot be silent, even for a moment. When the body does not act, the consciousness acts in the form of dreams. Unconsciousness is artificial. By induced extraneous help, it remains for a limited period, but when the intoxication of the drug is finished, or when one is awake, the consciousness again acts earnestly. Maitreya's statement is that in order to avoid unchaste conscious activities, he was trying to describe the unlimited glories of the Lord, although he did not have the ability to describe them perfectly. This glorification of the Lord is not a product of research, but the result of hearing submissively from the authority of the spiritual master. It is also not possible to repeat all that one has heard from a spiritual master, but one can narrate as far as possible by one's honest endeavor. It does not matter whether the Lord's glories are fully explained or not. One must attempt to engage one's bodily, mental, and verbal activities in the transcendental glorification of the Lord. Otherwise, such activities will remain unchaste and impure. The existence of the conditioned soul can be purified only by the method of engaging mind and speech in the service of the Lord. The Tridandi Sannyasi of the Vaishnava school accepts three rods, representing the vow to engage in the service of the Lord with body, mind, and speech, whereas the Ekadandi Sannyasi takes the vow to become one with the Supreme. Since the Lord is the Absolute, there is no distinction between him and his glories. The glories of the Lord as chanted by the Vaishnava Sannyasi are as substantial as the Lord himself. And thus, while glorifying the Lord, the devotee becomes one with him in transcendental interest, although he remains eternally a transcendental servitor. This simultaneous one and different position of the devotee makes him eternally purified, and thus his life becomes a complete success. Om Agyana Timarandasya Janandana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurubai Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Rangayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dini Tanarne Vanchakalpatrivischa Kripasindubhivacha Patitana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. In this verse and in the purport, especially, Srila Prabhupada is describing how purification for us conditioned souls necessitates purification of the consciousness. And that consciousness is perceived through our activities. our consciousness is always going to be active. And how we think and act, that determines our purity. So here in this purport, the advice is that we have all heard from Srila Prabhupada, from our acharyas, from our gurus, about the unlimited glories of the Lord. And so we should try to keep our consciousness filled with whatever we can remember. I don't know about you, but when I read a page, there's not a lot that I remember. But somehow or other, you know, if we can just remember something, then, you know, perhaps we can be successful. So when we remember things, if we can also share them, that helps our remembrance. Srila Prabhupada once commented that when we learn a verse, if we want to remember it, if we share it with someone three times, we're more likely to remember it. So it's one of those tandem processes that go together. Once Srila Prabhupada told Jamuna that if she didn't share her expertise in cooking, she could become a miser. Because when we share, we also remember. And so when we think about becoming a miser, you know, we get that vision of that, you know, Scrooge counting his money and he's kind of living in poverty and doesn't share anything. So he also doesn't benefit. Because when we share, we benefit. So we don't want to be Scrooges. We understand that we will become more spiritually purified when we share what we've heard. And Srila Prabhupada's further describing in the purport that not only might we become a miser, but we'll also be, Prabhupada more described it here in this purport as being unchaste. That if we don't follow what we've heard and share it, that is considered unchastity, because we're not doing what the previous acharyas have done and what they're advising us. Previously in the Bhagavatam and the Queen Kunti's prayers, there's a nice purport where Prabhupada defines chastity. And he described Kunti as being chaste because she always looked towards the Supreme Lord. So that's the definition here, that we need to be focusing as much as we can on the Supreme Lord. And the way to do that is by somehow remembering and sharing. So Kunti, in order to maintain that chastity, she was praying in your prayers, please may these calamities happen again and again, because somehow or other these calamities are forcing me to think of you. And so therefore they are welcome. Similarly, we need to find ways in which it becomes easy for us to remember and glorify the Lord, and how we can somehow or other apply it in some ways in our life. So when we read the philosophy and when we apply it, that's what we understand to be realization. We get some realization from it, so we apply it. And then when we experience the benefits of the application, we naturally get excited about it and we'll want to share it. So it's a very dynamic process. It's not just some, you know, dull thing. We sit in the corner and we read a book and, you know, sounds kind of boring. But it should become enlivening. When we read and we get a deeper understanding, you know, we get those aha moments. And those help us to improve and to grow. And then that improvement is going to manifest in our consciousness and naturally manifest in our actions. My husband often says that the evidence of our Krishna consciousness is going to be shown in our dealings with others, because our consciousness comes out. And our experience as marital educators is that that's especially pertinent with people that are close to us. Because when people are closer to us, we naturally share, and deeper things in our heart come out. You know, all those like anartas at the bottom of the basket, they start coming out. And it's a lot easier to get triggered in our negative interactions. And sometimes we don't respond well. So I know that triggered is one of those catch-all words, you know, that can mean so many things. But by any definition, you know, when we're triggered, if somehow or other we can modify our words, then there's a possibility for a change in consciousness. They work in tandem. You know, when our consciousness is purified, naturally our words will be more in the mode of goodness. And simultaneously, we can flip that. And if we can, you know, pause and say some words that are more in the mode of goodness, we can elevate our consciousness and the consciousness around us. Whereas when we have harsh interactions, we tend to elicit a very defensive response, which is also usually harsh. And so our conversations spiral downwards. So usually conversations end in the same mood in which they start. So if we can start our conversations on a higher level of consciousness, we're more likely to elevate that conversation. So here, Prabhupada's recommending that somehow or other, if we, you know, pause and remember our chastity, to follow along in the footsteps of our acharyas and act in a Vaishnava manner, in a softer, kinder way without blame or criticism, then we can each respond to each other on transcendentally higher platforms. So in the Sanskrit here, there's the words yata mati. And that is Maitreya starting out by expressing his humility. He's saying that in spite of my inability, somehow or other, he's recognizing his shortcomings. So when each of us can realize our shortcomings, then we can understand that there's so much more to know. So in Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, in the 8th verse, when Krishna is describing the process of knowledge, the first principle is amanitvam, humility. That if we're not humble, we're not going to think that there's anything to learn. And one primary application of humility is menial service. So we hear how, you know, Krishna and Balaram, they used to go and collect firewood for the guru, and how the disciples would, you know, wash the clothes of the spiritual master, or beg alms for buying boga or begging boga. That somehow or other, this menial service, it's one of those secret ingredients in relationships. So we hear that described, the process of spiritual development is sambandha, abhideya, and resulting in prayojana, the relationship, then the process by which we execute it, and then the result, that we can hope for. So Sambandha also refers to the relationship between knowledge and how knowledge is lived. So that's one of the reasons why menial service is a means to cultivate humility. Because without humility, we can't actually learn anything. It's one of those precursors to knowledge and wisdom. And it's nice to know that, because it's one of those clues that if we feel a little bit stuck in our progress of Krishna consciousness, we can maybe take a look and, you know, just start helping somebody with something or do a little menial service to someone else. And that can, you know, spark our humility and our ability to further learn. So this purport is stressing that maybe we don't remember much, but somehow or other, whatever we have assimilated, we just take that and we use it to glorify. And then we'll progress more. Often devotees would ask Srila Prabhupada how they could know if Krishna is pleased. And most of the time, Srila Prabhupada would reply that we can tell that Krishna is pleased when we see that the spiritual master is pleased. Once, however, he replied that you can tell that Krishna is pleased when you are satisfied. There's another time where Srila Prabhupada was asked about the criteria of a devotee. And Srila Prabhupada said, if he's not happy, he's not a devotee. So happy doesn't mean, you know, we're going around laughing and smiling and giggling. Happiness means we're satisfied within. Because when we're not spiritually satisfied, we're going to look to material things or means or activities to satisfy us, because there's going to be some emptiness. When we feel spiritually satisfied, we're going to feel full. Just like the feast comes around, and when you've had enough, you've had enough. So when we're satisfied, we won't be looking towards material things to give us that satisfaction. And we will understand that when our body, our mind, and our speech is used for the glorification of the Supreme Lord and his devotees. And when we see how much satisfaction that gives us. So satisfaction is our best protection against Maya. Because we won't want to look anywhere else to fill the void. Shushukam kartam avyayam, we'll just be happy within. And when we're happy, we're going to be excited. It's not just like some dry thing. We're excited about something we've learned or something that we've applied in bhakti. So we'll naturally share it. And when we're satisfied, we won't exhibit those symptoms of dissatisfaction, which are complaining and criticizing. There's this interesting discussion with Bhishma Dev in the Mahabharata, and he describes that when one is satisfied and equipoised, if somebody else comes to criticize them, they won't respond negatively. And he also described further that some interesting transference takes place, that when somebody criticizes us and we can stay satisfied and equipoised, that good karma, no, that there are negative qualities are transferred to that person who's been criticizing. And if it carries on and we stay equipoised, their good qualities come to us. So by staying in our higher consciousness, that's a win-win. You know, get to get rid of some karma and you get to get some good ones. So it's very interesting the results of applying the philosophy in our lives. Somebody was telling me recently that in order to be able to stay on the higher platform, we tend to recite the 10 offenses against chanting the holy name, you know, that one should not criticize or blaspheme the devotees of the Lord. So apparently Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also has, that's the 10 offenses, he has the 10 defenses. So he flips it around and he thinks, oh, so if the offense is not blaspheming, the defense is to praise and glorify the devotees of the Lord. So we can flip them and see the positive actions, which will be very beneficial to display. So once, just tell you a little Krishna pastime. The gopis were waiting and waiting and waiting for Krishna to come, and he came late. And somehow or other, they just were able to peacefully inquire, why are you so late tonight, Krishna? And Krishna said, well, I was over in the Bandiravana forest greeting my guru, Durvasa Muni. He has come there and I want to go and offer my respects to him, because by respecting the spiritual master, all good fortune comes. And so the gopis thought, oh, we'd like to see your spiritual master too. Could we go over? And he said, please do. It'll be to your benefit. He said, but it's dark and the Jamuna swells up in the night and I don't know how we're going to get across. And Krishna said, well, if you go to the Jamuna and you say, he told them to say to the Jamuna, if Krishna is a sincere brahmachari, please give us passage. They burst out laughing. They go, you've been with us all night here. How is the Jamuna going to accept that? He said, check it out. Give it a try. So they collected 56 big vessels full of sumptuous prasadam to offer to the guru. They went to the Jamuna River and they, you know, said what Krishna said. If Krishna is a pure brahmachari, please give us passage. Sure enough, the Jamuna parted and they went across the river to the other side. And they saw Durvasa Muni. They offered, they brought all these pots of food towards him and said, please, you know, eat from my pot first. So Durvasa Muni, he smiled, and in order to quell the competition of the gopis, he said, I will just open my mouth because I am a pure soul. I don't normally, you know, get involved with material things. Just pop the food in my mouth. So they started feeding Durvasa Muni, and he ate more and more and more, and he was very satisfied. And he said that, I give you the benediction that you all become very, staunch, that you all have staunch devotion to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. So they were so happy and they went to leave and they went back to Jamuna. But again it was swollen and they didn't know how they were going to get back. So they went and they asked Durvasa Muni, how can we cross? And he said, well, go to the bank of the Jamuna and say, O Jamuna Devi, if it is true that Durvasa Muni does not eat anything but a little juice from juicing durva grass. He was called Durvasa Muni because he just used to eat the juice of durva grass. So he said, if he has not eaten anything but this durva grass juice, then please let us cross to the other bank. So the gopis went to the bank of Jamuna and did as they were told by Durvasa, and they were surprised. Once again, the Jamuna immediately gave way, And they were thinking, how is this possible? I mean, we saw how much he ate. Anyway, they were quite bewildered, and they went across back. And there was Krishna waiting for them, and they had a wonderful evening with the Rasa dance. And after they were tired and they were sitting, the gopis said, could we ask you something, Krishna? We're kind of bewildered. I mean, you're not exactly a brahmachari. In fact, you know, you're kind of known as a rake. And I was thinking, what? Is that a common word? So I looked up the word rake. Rake means a guy who shops around a lot and's got many women is quite, you know. You know, gets around. So, you know, we know you're this way, and you spent all night with us. How is it that Jamuna accepted as true? You know, we feel it's kind of like an unchaste remark. You know, you're saying you're chaste when you're not. You're not, like, really following what you say. And Krishna said, and we don't understand how Durvasa Muni ate so much. And we went and said, he eats nothing but this austere juice of Durva. How is it that Jamuna parted again? It doesn't feel like chaste words. And Krishna explained that he is beyond the modes of material nature. He doesn't experience passion, ignorance, any of these things. And that his affectionate dealings with the gopis is just a reciprocation of their love, not according to any pushings that he has. And he said similarly, Durvasa Muni, he doesn't need to eat all this. He just did it to reciprocate your devotional attitude. So it is not a pushing. He is an austere sage, and I am also a brahmachari. And so the gopis were satisfied by this. So here we see that Krishna is explaining the mood and intent of the actions. And that's what we need to assimilate from Srila Prabhupada's books. If somehow or other we can assimilate Prabhupada's mood, then even if we're using our own words, we're going to remain chaste. And so that's our duty. And it's not as hard as we think. Once one of my friends was in Vrindavan, and she had a friend who associated with one Gaudiya Math. And so she went to Bhagavatam class one day with her over at the Gaudiya Math ashram. And there was a sannyasi who had been initiated by Srila Prabhupada, and then he took sannyas from somebody in the Gaudiya mission. And he was giving class from the Srimad Bhagavatam. They don't always give class from the Bhagavatam, they sometimes give from in other ways. And he was encouraging everybody to read Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. He said, because if you read and understand Prabhupada's mood, you will be able to understand everything else that you've read. He said, for example, if we go and we try to read the words of Jiva Goswami, sometimes he's preaching according to time, place, and circumstance. I think it was him, wasn't it, that he was saying that Swakiya Bhav was higher than Parakiya, just because he had some followers who just couldn't understand the conjugal rasa of Krishna with the gopis. And so he was in one particular book into some audience. He was saying that, you know, the queens in Dwarka, that was the highest rasa. So Srila Prabhupada was explaining in one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Rupa, that Jiva Goswami didn't believe that. He was just gaining the trust of the audience. And so he adjusted it so that they could further advance. So he said, similarly, if we don't understand the mood of Srila Prabhupada's books, we won't be able to understand properly other writings that we read. And once we have, then we will be able to see them in the proper light. Because the Vedas are very vast, And Prabhupada has very expertly extracted from the vast Vedas the conclusions of Vaishnavism. And so every conclusion that he has is in the mood of how to become a pure Vaishnava. So worship of the demigods is minimized because we want to attain pure love for Krishna. So in this way, we understand from Srila Prabhupada the Vaishnava conclusion of the Vedas, and we apply that in our lives. And we won't get bewildered, because nowadays devotees read so much from the Vedas and they want to apply this and that, but how do we actually apply it? By reading Srila Prabhupada's books and understanding his mood. So I'm going to open it up for your feedback, realizations, anything you'd like to share, any realizations you have. Get the person at the back and then I'll bring it to you.
Thank you for the nice class. I wonder if you could talk about how you see intimacy from in a mode of in sattvagun, it can be cultivated in relationships.
Ultimately, intimacy is sharing your heart. And when our hearts are more full with spiritual realizations, our intimacy is going to be greater. Also, intimacy, our relationships with others becomes more pure when we understand that we need to keep Krishna in the center and that we need to serve Krishna by how we serve the other person. So intimacy in more passion and ignorance is more self-centered and it's more about us. So when we have dealings which are to help each other advance in Krishna consciousness and all the varieties of that, that is how we're going to keep our intimacy in the mode of goodness and help us to advance. And intimacy is going to look different for different people depending on where we are in our advancement. And so wherever we are, we want to somehow or other move up. Did you want to ask anything else, or is that suffice?
That's it. Thank you.
We have Vyasa-san answers, and we have other answers when we're in private. All right. Prabhu.
Thank you for the nice class and the nice mood. You were mentioning that Sannyasi was talking about Srila Prabhupada's mood and so forth, and reminded me, I'm sorry, I forget the name of the book that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, but he talks in there about that devotees, when they follow a certain teacher, that they absorb that mood, you know, and I always felt like when Srila Prabhupada came to the West that he was just he really connected with us here in the West, and there are other teachers who have come, but he was like he had an arrow directly for those of us here in the West, that they just like captured our hearts. So anyway, so that kind of reminded me of that book that I read, and I'm sorry I don't remember the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Prabhupada was one of those exceptional people that could relate with everyone. And it's interesting how different disciples have absorbed some moods of Prabhupada more than others. So when you read different biographies, you get one mood of Prabhupada. When you read another, you get another mood. And in that way, you can start to understand all of the moods of Srila Prabhupada. Did you have a question here, Matiji, or a comment?
You were mentioning about remembering, you know, we read and then try to remember. Is it because of our consciousness that we are unable to remember more than, like, I got some memory problem, you know? Is it our consciousness that doesn't allow us to remember? And remember a million other things.
I suspect so. I also know we all have different bodies with different capabilities, so we have to accept our limitations. I notice my memory has more limitations than it used to, and I hope it's not because of my consciousness. Maybe it is. I also think that it's a matter of focus. Satchinandana Maharaj, he explains, and I don't remember where he got it from, how it's very advantageous to pinpoint one thing in a text or a purport that particularly strikes you. And if you kind of look for that one gem and then see how we could apply it in our lives, we're more likely to remember it. So I find that to be a good technique, just to see, oh, what stands out for me, you know, in this purport or verse, and how could I apply it? Then we're more likely to remember it. So it's also a conscious focus that's our goal.
Thank you. That's very helpful. On another point, also on the same point you mentioned, to repeat it with others. Do you have any tips on how? Sometimes it's just if we remember something that we read, and to repeat it, and that's also sometimes an awkward thing to repeat something. That, so any tips on that?
Well, I found that when I get really excited about something, I can't help but repeat it, and I've also found that you'll be in a discussion with somebody, and the point will come up and you'll remember it, and then you get to share it, so it's not so awkward. Somehow or other, Krishna helps us. He arranges some circumstances where we can. And so what if you're one of those awkward people that just comes up and tells somebody some nectar about Krishna? You can get worse reputations. Be brave.
Hare Krishna, thank you. I was appreciating what you were saying. I just want to make sure I've got it right. If someone comes up to you and they're, you know, in a critical mood, let's say, and from what I understand of what you said is that you don't respond in a critical way and you absorb their good qualities and they also get
your bad. That's what Bhishmadeva is saying in the Mahabharata.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, we're devotees, and so we should be compassionate. And we teach a skill where when somebody's being critical, it's because they have an unmet need. And if we can be compassionate and perhaps acknowledge their unmet need, see beyond the criticism, to, I can understand that, you know, you're really angry that everyone's late and we're going to go, you know, miss the bus or whatever. I can understand that, you know, punctuality is a value for you. And maybe that will, you know, diffuse their anger, and then they can respond positively. So we can even help that person. It's not that we just want to stand there and go, oh good, keep criticizing, I'm going to get your, you know, bring on all your good karma, you know, and take my bad. Go on. We're not. It's not that we sit there and act like that. It's just, I think, a graphic reminder of how we should have better Vaishnava dealings. So, thank you.
If I remember correctly, there was a point and a question about being able to remember something that you read, which is hard sometimes, but we're so conditioned. And I remember one time, it was quite striking, Srila Prabhupada was giving class, and he was encouraging devotees to chant the Sanskrit mantras. And he was saying, this is a samvarbation that's directly coming from the spiritual world. And he was saying, even if you don't understand the language of the Sanskrit, simply by attempting to vibrate those mantras, he said, you become purified. And then it was quite even more striking, he said. He said, even if you don't understand the English, he said, even if you don't understand the English, if you simply try to understand, he said, Krishna will take you back to Godhead. So to the best of our ability, we should try and remember and try to find those gems there.
And because it's spiritual, it somehow acts even though we're not conscious of it. I remember one time somebody asked me a question, and I came up with an answer that I was a little bit surprised with, and I was thinking, I hope this is right. So I had this habit of when I went to bed, I would listen to a Prabhupada lecture, and inevitably I fall asleep partway through, but it was in the days of cassettes, and it would just finish and then stop. So that night I stayed awake a little bit longer, and there Prabhupada gave the answer that I gave to that person. I must have heard it the other night and didn't remember it. So it's acting. Okay, people are getting fired up about this. They have just experiences.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much. That example you gave, as you were speaking earlier, I was remembering, it was from a really long time ago. I was young, I was distributing books in the airport. And this young man came up and started asking me really philosophical questions. And I just was able to answer his questions, one after another, things I didn't eat. He left and I'm like, where did all that come from? It was just what you said. Mm-hmm. But Krishna gives remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness.
Thank you, Uttama, for your very wonderful class. On this point of remembering, we've heard the story of the guru at the banks of a river, and the disciple comes and says, I hear what you say, but I can't remember. I can't seem to retain, you know, after a short time, just what you've said. So he says, please take this basket to the river and bring it back full of water. So he did. And he brought it back, but the water had already escaped. Go ahead, do it again. And so maybe 3, 4, 5 times he gave him the same instruction. And then he finally came back. What's the use of this? You know, the disciple says. But the guru says, look at the basket. Isn't it cleaner? The basket is cleaner. Even though it didn't retain the water, it is become purified. So also, just go on with that practice, daily practice of hearing, and purification takes place.
Just like we were reciting that verse at the beginning of Bhagavatam, somehow or other, just by the association devotees and hearing the wonderful words of Srila Prabhupada, we hope to purify our hearts. So thank you so much for your comments and your association, and it's wonderful to be here with you. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.